T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back, DGS. Can we share that? We don't have to.
Sure.
Okay.
My New Year's resolution?
Yes. I'm intrigued.
It's to not curse whenever I get upset, because that's something that happens. And I'm always like, what, Rachel? No. So I just messed something up and I was like, and then I just don't want to be like that. I want to stop.
Well, good for you.
I don't see you as a big cursor.
Yeah, we have lots bigger problems with you.
Okay.
So, yeah, we can make a list.
I just don't want to be that person who's like, man, they're pretty foul-mouthed, you know?
I read a report recently, because you know I'm always reading reports, that said medical, scientific, sports medicine study that two things help performance. The game face. Believe it or not, making a game face adds to your performance level. And cursing, specifically with weightlifting, that if you yell mustard, it doesn't help as much, I swear to God, if you curse.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why. Maybe the cursing, like, disengages a part of your brain and allows, I don't know, who knows. But I just know that was a thing. Great. We have a biblical scholar on for Paranormal Wednesday. Brian Godawa, who we had on before talking about the Nephilim, and don't think we're not going to talk Nephilim this time, has a new book out called Jezebel, Harlot Queen of Israel, and he joins us now. Brian, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Dave.
So, Rachel, you love this story, right? Isn't this one that you said that you liked? Am I making that up?
You're probably talking about the story of Queen Esther, which I have mentioned that I like a lot, which is she's very different than Jezebel, so the harlot queen of Israel.
So these are different people.
These are very different people. Maybe Brian can expand on that.
As
for
you
us.
Can see.
Yeah. Yeah, Jezebel is pretty much like the opposite, exact opposite image of Esther. Esther is like one of those, you know, strong yet traditional women in the Bible who end up being in the line of Messiah. It was through her line that Jesus actually was born. And Jezebel, of course, was the most ruthless, wicked queen in all of Israel's history. And that's why, but of course, like Game of Thrones, people do love a good villain, and she is definitely a good villain for a story.
See, it goes to show you how much I don't know. Because people will say, like, she's kind of a Jezebel. I always meant that meant, like, a harlot, a loose woman.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Now, that's an interesting thing, because I also titled the novel Harlot Queen of Israel, right? Jezebel, Harlot Queen of Israel. And in the Bible, she's often referred to using that kind of language, harlotry or adultery, but it's actually not what many people think it is. They think it's the outward sexuality. She wasn't a prostitute or a harlot or anything like that. What it was a spiritual metaphor, because Jezebel was a pagan Phoenician from the city of Tyre who married King Ahab in Israel. And that was because the two nations were trying to unite, you know, against their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And when she did that, she brought Baal worship into Israel. And of course, you know, Israel was supposed to only worship one God, Yahweh. And she brought Baal worship in and built a temple of Baal. And that brought child sacrifice and all kinds of monstrous things. So the prophets would often refer to her in that terminology, like, you're spiritually unfaithful. You're like a spiritual harlot, whereas, like, you know, Israel was supposed to be like the wife of Yahweh, you know, metaphorically speaking. But because they fell away and worshiped Baal, they became adulteresses, you know, that kind of a thing.
Isn't that interesting?
That's what that really means.
And thousands of years later, just normal people like me think that she was probably loose.
Yeah. And so interestingly, in the novel, I don't find much reason to see her as being, she was a ruthless, wicked queen in terms of what she did and brought in. But when you read my novel, she actually starts out to be a faithful wife to Ahab, and they actually have a good, loving relationship, you know. It's just the difference is, you know, and this is another thing that I try to do is, you know, a religious approach to the story, you know, like a secular people sort of embrace the image and wear it as a badge of honor. You know, there's a Jezebel.com is a famous, you know, website that's sort of feminist and all that. But the religious people tend to make her out to be extremely bad and wicked in all cases. But actually, I think she imagine you have to have a good villain. You have to see it through their eyes. And so my Jezebel in this story comes from a more sophisticated culture of Tyre. They're sea traders, et cetera. So, and she's just more cultured than Israelites, who are kind of more Iron Age people.
Yeah.
So she wants to bring in, you know, sort of progressive views, and you know they worship one God, which is a little stultifying. So you know, I think it'll help them if they could reach out to other gods to get more help in life, that kind of a thing. So from her perspective, she's a good guy, because you know, villains never see themselves as villains, right?
True. Yeah.
But of course, if you look at what her belief was, she ended up bringing child sacrifice and other idolatrous practices.
Yeah, she had her own reason for child sacrifice. I mean, let's try to, you know, try to see it through her eyes.
Well, now that's an interesting thing. You know, from our perspective now, it seems so extreme and outrageous. And even like, how could they really do that? But if you really, you know, one of my reasons why I write these novels that I do, and, you know, Jezebel is only the first of in the series of Chronicles of the Watchers. And as you mentioned before, my previous novels, Chronicles of the Nephilim, it's kind of the same thing. I'm dealing with the same kind of issues, but retelling Bible stories, but showing the supernatural side of things. But I think that I lost track of my thought. What I was thinking.
That's okay, because I have some very out of left field questions for you, okay?
Okay, let's go.
So you may know everything about this, you may know nothing about it, but I love nerd shows. And I was watching one the other day on Netflix, I believe, called Buried Secrets of the Bible. And it's this female biblical scholar who I believe is an atheist. And she was basically taking on all the Old Testament stories and showing how they were crap. And one of the things that she, one of the episodes was about how God had a wife. And I forget her name, but it was making the argument that the Old Testament itself, the Torah, talks openly about God's name being Yahweh, but also being El, E-L, as in Israel, and that it's the same person, and that El had a wife. Flesh this out for me if you can.
Yes, no, that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is another reason why I wrote the book, because I did research into the archaeology, and I know that woman's work, and I saw that show. I can't tell you her name, because it's this wild, weird Italian-sounding name or something. Yeah. So, but anyway, nevertheless, that was something that's very interesting, and that's a good example of how a person's presuppositions determines their interpretation. And so, for example, if you come at the evidence of archaeology and assume, well, there's no God, there's no such thing as a God, and Israel must be false and all this, you know, you're going to spin it one way. And if you come as a believer in the Bible, you'll spin it another. And the evidence is this. When you look in the archaeology, and which I have done, and, you know, lots of great work out there on that, you do find, actually, all throughout Iron Age Israel, and even particularly in this time period, which is the 9th century that I'm writing about, they found a lot of artifacts that do indicate the Israelites worshipped, the goddess you're talking about is called Asherah, and they worshipped her as the wife of Yahweh. So there are references where it says Yahweh and his Asherah, et cetera, right? And so there was, a lot of that idol worship going on. But the question is, you know, it's so funny, like, well, the Bible doesn't say that, though. I mean, when you read the Bible, it clearly says very clearly that, yeah, the Israelites were worshiping Asherah, and they did it for hundreds of years, but it was wrong. And the prophets, the whole point of the prophets was saying, stop worshiping Asherah, stop worshiping Ashtart, stop worshiping Baal and all these gods, and get returned to Yahweh. So the point is that the Bible very clearly, the Bible doesn't hide that or anything. It says that they did, but that doesn't justify it. Just because you find artifacts that prove that, oh, Israelites worshiped Asherah, that doesn't mean that the Bible accepts it or that the prophets accepted it, because they didn't.
Brian, is there any indication in the Bible that Baal or Asherah were considered to be real entities? Like, hey, look, Baal's a real guy, but he's terrible and you should not worship him. He is a lesser being than me. Or does it give the idea that, look, these guys are just made up anyway, but you shouldn't be making images of some made up thing and worshiping them instead of me?
Yeah, no, that's another good question, because the typical understanding is the second one that you just gave, where it's like, oh, there are no such things as gods, they're not real, etc. But I do believe that there is indication that there is at least spiritual reality behind these gods. You know, were there specific gods with those names running around, or were they demons masquerading? I don't know. But the Bible does talk about that, and they're called the Watchers. And if you look at Deuteronomy 32, it explains how Moses writes about how at the Tower of Babel, when man was trying to become a god and build a tower to heaven, you know, that kind of thing, God came and confused the languages, and he spread them out and created the nations. And he created separated nations in order to keep man from unifying in evil, right? But part of what it says there in Deuteronomy, it says, and God placed them under the authority of the sons of God. But and it says he allotted them as their inheritance, but Yahweh allotted Israel to himself. And so the principle there, and it goes throughout the Bible as well, there's other areas where it explains this, but that's the basic scenario, which is all the pagan, in the Israelite worldview, the pagan nations worshiped pagan gods, and God had given them over. It's sort of like saying, if you're going to keep being these wicked people and not worship me, I'm going to give you over to those gods that you worship and see how you like what they do for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, I do believe that there was some demonic reality behind those, because elsewhere in the Bible, not a lot of places, but there are a few other places, we hear about even the term watchers, like in the book of Daniel. And the watchers are very clearly called principalities of Persia and principalities of Greece, and how they battle with each other. And the concept is this. The understanding was that the earthly authorities and nations, you know, had over them heavenly authorities. And like I said, Israel's authority over them was Yahweh, but the authorities over the pagan nations were these fallen watcher beings, and it's sort of like being ruled by the mafia, right? That kind of thing. And so when Daniel talks about this, what they believed was that when there was an earthly war going on, they believed there was also a corresponding war in the heavens, because it's like the earth and the heavens were linked, and so were the authorities. So, for example, when it talks about how Babylon will be destroyed, and then he says, and the stars will fall from heaven. They believe the stars were reflections of those angelic beings, and so they were uniting the sort of they're using the kind of language that describes fallen angelic beings mm-hmm. when the fall of earthly powers occur.
Okay, I'm just going to keep peppering you. My guest here is Brian Godawa. He's been with us before. He is the author of Jezebel, Harlot Queen of Israel. Update, Jezebel and Esther are two different people. So that was just fake news on my part. Okay, what I grew up believing, and I'm not sure if it was Sunday school or children's Bible or what, but what I grew up believing was that Satan was named Lucifer, that he was the most beautiful of the angels, that God just loved him, he was his favorite, and then Lucifer got all uppity and thought that he should be God, and he took a third of the angels in revolt, and they got cast down to earth, and now he's the devil. Is there any biblical truth to that, or is that just something here in the West that we have kind of made up, and that's who Satan is?
Yeah, that is the traditional view. And I, you know, I have respect that scholars that I respect even still hold to that. I no longer hold to that viewpoint, because I believe the passages that they believe are referring to that are not referring to it at all. Let me give you just, you know, one example is the one you're talking about with, let's see if I can find it here, Morning Star. So there's the passage where God is judging Babylon, and God is judging the king of Babylon. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the kings, like the king of Babylon, thought they were gods. They thought they were sons of God themselves, and that they were, you know, they were like gods. And so when they rose in power, they were like rising to the heights of God's authority. And so that passage in Isaiah that you're referring to, it talks about how it's actually a judgment against the king of Babylon. And it's saying, you thought you would be like a god, you would climb to the heights of heaven. You know, people get this idea that that's Lucifer. Well, in the passage it says, you were Hillel ben Shakar, you were a shining one. And the problem is that in some English translations it says Lucifer, but Lucifer is not a name even for Satan. Lucifer is simply the Latin translation of the word for Venus, the morning star in Hebrew, because the ancient world believed that Venus was a star, but they also believed it was a god, and like a deity. And so a king would rise up to heaven like Venus, the morning star, and he would claim his authority and claim his, you know, that godhood, that kind of thing. But Isaiah is judging him. He says, no, God's going to come and judge Babylon. He's going to take you down and bring you down to the earth and judge you. And so, you know, another proof of the fact that the Lucifer morning star thing is not Satan, in the book of Revelation, and I think it's Revelation 22, Jesus is called Venus, the morning star, which if you translate that would into Latin, that would be Lucifer. And so the point is that they believe Venus was a form of divinity, and so you linked yourself to the stars to express your divinity. And that's all that's happening in that passage. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe there is the serpent in the garden there isn't a real Satan character, because in the New Testament there's a Satan that, you know, confronts Jesus. But there's another element of Satan that I think a lot of people don't understand, and that is the word Satan is not actually in the Bible a literal name of a being. It's actually an office. The word Satan is a transliteration, which means they didn't translate the word. They just transliterated it from the Hebrew. It's ha-satan. But the problem is if you translate it's actually the adversary. And so really, when you see that word Satan, it's saying the adversary. Now, that is a hostile being, and I would agree that that's a, you know, whatever you can call it, whatever you want to call it, the adversary confronted Jesus in the desert. I believe that was a real being of some kind. But if you see where I'm getting at, we have created this sort of mythology about Satan and Lucifer that isn't quite really fully biblically accurate. And I think that the more you study on that stuff, I would recommend a book that's not my own. Mm-hmm. It's called Deconstructing Lucifer by a great author. And he explains a lot of this stuff in a way that's very understandable.
Man, such great stuff. I could talk to you all day. Brian, where's the best place to find your new book?
Everything's on Amazon. You can get it in Kindle, paperback, or audiobook, as all my novels are. And just in my website, if you want to, you know, look up more information on me and the series and other free stuff, it's just Godawa.com, my name, GODAWA.com.
Great, man. We'll talk to you very soon. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God. I love the Bee Gees.
I love them more.
I could never admit it. Like, that was not cool to love the Bee Gees when I was, like, in junior high. I just love them.
What was the big Bee Gees controversy?
What did Mark say?
Well, you're not an F.
What did Ilse? He's not an F and BG.
We were arguing about the brothers, and I think we were arguing like which was the good looking one and which one was the
BG.
There you
and
go.
And then we brought up one of the Gibbons brothers and was like, well, he's the one, but he was like, no.
Oh, we brought up Andy Gibb.
He can't
Andy
be
was
yeah.
the
cute he, one.
He was a Gibb, but he wasn't a BG.
But yeah, we couldn't.
And that's how angry Mark got.
What did he say again? Like, can I hear that again?
Not a BG.
He was insane.
Yeah, he was kind of scary. That's an uncomfortable level to rise to.
And I remember it being uncomfortable. We're all laughing and stuff.
This was like we were recording something else.
Yeah, reason he...
Because he obviously didn't cuss on the air.
Right.
This was a hot mic situation.
Yes.
Yeah, the reason he used the F word is because we weren't on the air. But if we're talking about anything off the air that we're carrying a discussion over from on the air... That's pretty serious. And for him to get that animated about a conversation that we were having on the air that we brought over to an off-air discussion, and he's still that angry.
There were so many times when you guys would be talking, and I'd be like, oh, we're in a studio, and I'd just start rolling, and we caught a lot of those moments. A lot less fighting on the show now, I will say.
That was directed at me. I remember that was directed at me. I can't remember exactly what I said, but we were in one of our arguments. And
man, I have such a... to me, interesting musical background, having just like the Beatles were a religion for me, and I didn't have FM radio. And so I would listen to, like, I want to say KXOK, but I could be wrong. But it was like Leo Sayer and the Pointer Sisters.
Yep.
And I thought that was rock and roll. Like, if someone said, like, do you like rock? I'm like, oh, dude, Pointer Sisters, man.
I can get down with some Pointer
and
Sisters.
Then, I would play music, and I got into Raw Toast, and I didn't know any of the music. And then someone played Judas Priest for me, and I'm, you know.
You got another thing coming.
You don't know what you don't know. It's a good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the Bee Gees.
You know how we have these, you're going to spend 12 days of your life shopping for groceries. This one really got me. How many days of your life, I don't want to do it this way, because you guys will screw me and you'll say like a million. You spend 43 days of your life, 43 days, trying to open hard-to-open packaging.
What?
23 days.
That's an impossible thing to study.
I agree.
Yeah, because it's going to be different for everyone.
That's an impossible thing to study.
I've never spent more than 10 minutes on a package.
I haven't either.
So if I do that once a week, I don't know. That one seems fake.
But you don't.
Fake
That's
news.
Just it. I mean, I don't get that many packages.
Well, that's kind of sad.
Even if...
Well, okay, not everyone orders 30 things from eBay on a weekly basis.
How did this turn to me?
When you attacked Sue.
Uh-huh.
When you said she was sad.
Sue said she was sad.
I had to rise up and defend her.
I disagreed.
You didn't say
I just agreed that she was sad.
I just think that's ridiculous.
I used to get so mad when the kids were little and every doll, like, it was like.
You used to get mad?
It was like, you kind of open them. It was like Abu Ghraib. Like, every little doll was.
Oh my gosh. A Barbie doll does not need to be strapped that tight to a package.
Yeah. True. Is she a terrorist?
I would get so excited to get a Barbie. And then, you know what? Maybe this number is true because I would spend the rest of Christmas Eve wrestling it out of the package.
And then.
Twisty time.
Believe it or not.
Get the scissors
out. I would get frustrated and impatient. And I would just grab Barbie by her midsection and yank her. Mm. You'd always lose a limb. But it was politically correct. So.
Well, you got
armless
that.
Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Grace, you have a rant in you?
Ugh. Okay. So I saw The Atlantic is just one of those websites, media centers. They're always posting dumb stuff. Here is a headline that's going around Twitter right now. Is it weird to wear leggings at work? Subtitle, women put up with a lot at the office. At least grant us elastic waistbands. Basically arguing that it doesn't matter if it's appropriate or not. We put up with a lot. So just let us wear the comfy pants. Professional or no, you guys don't. Women, haven't we worked long and hard enough to where we deserve this? I mean, I guess. Is that really what feminism is now?
Is that the reparations you want?
We've gotten so much. We've risen to a level that now what we need to fight for is the right to wear leggings to the workplace. That's how the man's keeping me down at this point.
Yeah, wearing pants.
Ladies, we're running out of chips to cash in at this point.
It's like, listen, we are sick of your misogyny. We are going to wear clothes that show every square inch of our genitals, whether you like it or not. Men are like, okay, fair enough deal. We're even.
You really showed me.
What do you guys think of leggings at work?
I remember in the 80s when stirrup pants were a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And you'd wear them under there. And somebody had put out a card. You used to send cards, you know. And in the card it said, stretch pants / leggings are a privilege, not a right. And
you get
and
weird
I thought,
cards.
Yeah. Because you'd send each other goofy things. I can't remember who
said
that.
Who are these
that.
People? Okay, now I need to drill down. Okay. No one ever sent you that card.
Yeah, they did. I could probably dig it out.
Happy birthday.
It was a funny card.
No, it was a funny card to make you
fun.
Laugh. Yeah. It's a privilege,
thing,
not a right.
Okay. I don't understand you women.
But I don't know. Leggings fine, but you have to wear them a certain way. You can't be just wearing something short with leggings. I don't know.
Look, it just depends. I don't wear like leggings just around now that I'm older. When I was younger, I was like, all bets are off, whatever. Now I'm a little older and I want to be a little bit more modest. Now I don't judge anyone who does it. I just don't like to know that someone is looking at my butt. So I try to cover up a little bit more.
Tony's looking right now.
However, if you...
Oh, you didn't want to know that. I'm sorry.
If you don't care about that, what? Fine. But if your workplace says, hey, we don't want you to wear workout pants that are skin tight, and like you said, you can see everything, we want you to wear actual trousers or a skirt, I don't think that that is a knock against the feminist movement.
No.
And you always see these stories of like, you just want me to cover up my body. In some cases, yes, because it's more professional to be covered up, right? I mean,
yep.
I don't want a guy to wear leggings to work and see all of his package
goods
out there.
Right.
And if we're allowed to wear leggings, then men, then men should be able to wear them too. And I don't want them to. I want a little bit more mystery than that.
Trivia
so.
Question.
Yeah.
Who, what man did you expect the least from wearing leggings that actually brought it? You know the answer to this. We just talked about him.
Hmm.
Remember when close?
Yeah. Oh, when you
put on
Trisha's
pants?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
He looked like a muscular Jiminy Cricket.
You know what? The guy's got great legs.
Yeah.
He does.
He looks like if Pinocchio worked out.
He's got great legs and then the feet.
Oh, the feet.
Not a baby.
Feet are dead. If you touched his or looked at his feet, but you didn't know they were attached to a leg,
yeah,
you would think you're at a crime scene.
Every movie or television show that goes down into the morgue and they have all the
tag
bodies
on the toe,
and the toe that like how there's hand models,
yeah,
he should be used for every morgue
shot
scene.
Yeah, they wouldn't have to use any makeup.
Like, he's the special guy. Like, okay, we got to get...
Or to teach medical students.
Yeah, here's a list of
we're
going
to get you used to dead, cold bodies.
Here's a list
this
of,
is Mark.
Here's a list of hand models. Here's a list of morgue
feet.
People. Mark, close to the top of this list.
Well, we can't afford him.
Let's get him in here.
He's the A-lister.
Best of the best.
Morgue feet people.
Do you know...
see him saying, like, oh, there's my foot.
This guy scales $1,000 a day,
yeah.
But... in his defense, he only has one vein in his feet, yeah. And it's green.
It's the
He's the
deadest,
best in the business.
It's the deadest foot you'll ever
see. He has
see.
Three Emmys for NCIS.
Yeah.
In summary for the leggings thing, I'm not here to decide whether or not it's appropriate. That's up to your work dress code.
I am.
But if your work dress code tells you it's not appropriate and you're trying to make it into a female feminism issue, you got to get a grip. It's not that serious, guys.
I did some quick math.
Okay.
If you struggle with packaging... I'm sad, so serious. I did this
all right,
real quick.
All right.
If you struggle with packaging for 10 minutes a week, which is what you said.
Which is fair.
For 75 years.
Okay.
A 75-year lifespan, it would only be 27 days.
Fake news.
And that's 10 minutes a week. I can't tell you the last time I even spent 10 minutes. It's been weeks, if not months. That's if 10 minutes every week for 75 years, it's... only half of what they said.
We debunked it.
Yep.
Want to paint you a picture. So just now we came in with this song, bring it up a little bit. And Sue started dancing like a leprechaun that just put peyote in his butthole.
Wow, that's specific. That's what I call it.
Dave watches a lot of videos like that, so he would know.
You can Google any one of those three words, and those videos will come up. Kind of apropos of the whole leggings thing, there was a teacher, I don't know where, here in America, like a grade school teacher, and they had a Halloween party and a costume party, and she came as a flasher. And so she was wearing a trench coat, and then when you open it up, and she's like a bigger gal, she's wearing, I guess, like a pantyhose bodysuit that have very realistic fake boobs. And not realistic pubic hair, but a bunch.
Seriously.
And she wore that to school.
Wow.
And she has been put on suspension and is looking at a big demotion and losing like $40,000 a year in her salary. So now there's a big kerfuffle of You're shaming her.
How?
Yeah.
How are they shaming her?
Because it wasn't real. It was a costume. There were no boobs or pubic hair.
There was just the heavy implication of them and the cartoonization of them. Like,
yes.
If she were to draw a cartoon of a naked woman on the whiteboard or the blackboard, she would get in trouble for that because she's drawing attention to genitalia for no reason around children. This is not rocket science, people.
That's another one that's so easily avoided. Just wear...
Just don't do that.
Just wear... Even if you're going to say, I'm going as a flasher, okay, whatever. Just wear a neutral skin outfit with no...
Man, am I a prude for thinking she shouldn't go as a flasher at all?
No, no. She shouldn't go as a flasher. But yes, if you're going to...
I am a sexual predator. Do
yeah,
I win?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Hi, kids.
Are they shaming her because she was a bigger lady? Is that what the point
all of
was?
It.
Oh,
all
I
of
see.
It.
Oh, if it was a hot teacher, she would have never gotten in trouble. A man would have never gotten in trouble for wearing a naked suit with cartoonish genitalia.
Google it so you can see the image. That'll help.
I have seen someone wear, just a neutral bodysuit. Well, not even a bodysuit, just something neutral so that,
go.
You know.
What an idiot. I see the photos here and the costume is blurred.
Oh, wow.
Geez.
The one I saw wasn't blurred.
What an idiot.
Yeah, there's a lot of choices. Why would you do that? What?
People are probably looking at the man in the sumo suit next to her like, that guy's got his shirt off. What's the issue? It's because he's a man.
Can you imagine?
You're not even going to let her wear leggings to work.
Going to pick up your child and you walk in and the teacher flashes you. And thinks you're going to laugh and be like, that's the best costume I've ever seen.
Oh, no, this is much worse than I thought. This is like...
Do you have one non-blurred?
It's still slightly blurred, but you can see stuff. It's way thin. The bodysuit I had seen in costumes previously were, opaque. This is not opaque. That is disturbing.
It's translucent.
Oh, that's
This
awful.
Is not opaque!
Oh.
People are so stupid. And then there's outcry.
We live
outcry.
In the dumbest time
there's
ever.
There's outcry for there being consequences to your stupid decision. So should no one ever be punished for anything, ever? That's what, it's either it's an overreaction to nothing, or a very real issue where a woman is flaunting nudity, fake or no. It shouldn't be happening around children.
Well,
and then people are like, you're just shaming
You guys brought up a great point I hadn't thought of. You're going as a flasher, a sexual predator. It'd be like if you went as a pedophile, you know, if somehow you dressed up however that and you had candy and they're like, what are you? I'm a pedophile.
I'm a rapist.
I'm an older guy that likes little kids.
Yeah.
During the party, her name is Coker. She inappropriately flashed children, staff, and colleagues. Employees were offended, and some said they couldn't tell if the costume was fake or if she was really naked under the coat. After flashing the partygoers, Coker said, hey, everybody, relax. Please erase the pictures.
I think it's Coker.
I'm calling her Coker.
I don't know.
Cocker.
Oh, boy.
Because she must have been on some Coker.
None of them is good.
I don't mean to... I don't mean to break news here at the almost end of a segment, but it's a good thing that your mom made it out today before this news hit, because she may not have been able to leave the house. Nestle, breaking news, Nestle has agreed to sell its U.S. ice cream operations for $4 billion. The deal includes Häagen-Dazs, Edie's, and Drumsticks.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
You're selling them.
Wow.
To whom?
On the day that we met Francis.
Fornari? Forneri.
That sounds foreign.
It looks
what
like,
do they know about delicacies?
Selling it to Ferrari.
But Nestle owns a piece of Fornari. So how do you get...
How do you get
$4 billion from a company that you
own a piece
of?
Yeah,
that's a good deal.
It is a good deal. But I don't know. It could change the way drumsticks are manufactured.
It just got real.
I know.
I'm sorry. I just keep reading the stupid Coker flasher story.
No,
you're
Cocker.
Fine. She makes $154,000 a year. They're not
Being
even
a flasher.
They're not even firing her. They're demoting her to another position where she makes $110,000. And this woman is somehow a victim. What? Oh, I'm about to break my New Year's resolution of no cussing.
Classic Cougar.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.